This is Radio Times. I'm Artie Moss-Cohen. When Michael Nutter became mayor of Philadelphia, he vowed to make it the greenest city in the country. That meant cutting energy costs, creating jobs tied to the environment, managing waste and wastewater, opening up more bike lanes, and increasing residents' access to parkland and open space. While the city has ambitious plans to become a more sustainable place to live and work, environmental visionaries and pioneers have also been hard at work. Today it's the fifth and final installment of Philadelphia Innovators, our week-long look at and conversations with folks who are doing cool and exciting things in the city, and four of them have joined us here in our Philadelphia studio. We begin with Catherine Gajewski. She's director of the Mayor's Office of Sustainability. And Catherine, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Great to be here.
Also with us is Hailey Johnston, co-founder and co-director of Common Market Philadelphia. That's a distributor of locally grown foods to the Philadelphia region. And Hailey Johnston, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you.
Also with us, Tim McDonald. He's an architect, president of Onion Flats, and that's an award-winning development design building collective in Philadelphia dedicated to building buildings that are net zero energy in the city. And Tim McDonald, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks, Marty. Great to be here.
Nice to hear have you with us as well. And we round things out with John Wybar, co-founder, manager of Revolution Recovery, now operates two recycling facilities, employs 70 people, diverts over 400 tons of construction and manufacturing waste from landfills every day. And John Wybar, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you, Marty.
Let me begin with you, Catherine, if I could. And Mayor Michael Nutter said that a couple of years ago, making the city the greenest in the country, lofty goals. How close do you think the city is to completing those goals?
We are well on our way. We released a sustainability plan called Greenworks Philadelphia in 2009. So we're going into our fourth year of implementation of that plan. We have over 168 initiatives that we're working to advance, and progress is underway on 89% of them. So we've been able to engage nearly every city department and work with a number of external partners who are really enthusiastic about the vision and about making it a reality through the plan.
And is it about saving money, saving the environment, all of the above?
It's really about all of the above and more. We took a really comprehensive look at sustainability, so issues related to energy, both energy efficiency, renewable energy, air quality, greenhouse gases, open space, water management, the economy and the ties to the economy, how this all comes to helpfully increase quality of life in the city and that community piece to it. So we're really looking at a diverse number of initiatives that we're committed to undertaking.
Hailey, let me turn to you, and you are co-founder, co-director of Common Market Philadelphia. What is Common Market Philadelphia?
Yeah, so Common Market is a distributor of local foods in our region. We serve and connect communities with sustainable farm food grown all around the Philadelphia area. For us, our vision for sustainability really began with looking at our community and trying to figure out what we could do to sustain and restore the health and well-being of low-income, minority, underserved residents. So we started looking at how we could expand food access to these populations while also improving the viability of sustainable family farms all around the Delaware Valley.
Are you a middleman, in a sense, linking farms and farmers with folks in the city?
Exactly that. We are the middle people, not necessarily the middleman.
I was looking at you.
Right. So we are the middle people. But one of the things that we've tried to do from the very beginning is figure out how we can lower the environmental impact of farming and the distribution system in our region. So how do we actually eliminate many of the layers of middle people between the farmer and the consumer, making the system that much more environmentally friendly, reducing emissions, as well as making food more affordable for the consumer and returning more of that food dollar to the farmer.
And how many farms and farmers have you worked with or are you working with?
Yeah, so in a given year, we distribute and aggregate food from almost 100 farmers from throughout the region. And typically, almost all of those farmers are within 150 miles of Philadelphia.
And people buy this food, right?
Yeah, that's right. We're not giving food away. We're not a food bank. We're a social enterprise, in fact. We are a nonprofit social enterprise. And our primary customers are the institutions that serve low-income and minority communities in our region, as well as some of the retail stores as well.
John, let me turn to you. And I was reading about how you got into the, shall we say, recovery business?
Yes.
the trash business. How did you get into the trash business?
Well, actually, it was my business partner's master plan. He was carting cleaning up home building sites and carting just loads of wood and drywall and taking it to the landfill. And I was sitting there thinking, this is crazy. So I was going online and reading up on what people were doing in Wisconsin with drywall. And we went for a bike ride in Fairmount Park. I'd known him through high school. And he said, you know a thing about green building. You want to help me out with this business idea I've got? And I passed it first, but called him back. And that was it. We set out to do drywall recycling and quickly recognized the huge need the construction industry had. They were just throwing out all of their material. And that was kind of what started. That was 2004.
That almost seems like a movie. I mean, two guys on bicycles talking about creating a business. And yeah. Here you are, almost a decade later.
Yeah, who would have thought? Who would have thought? And it's been, yeah, it's been a long decade.
But the idea was that at these construction sites, builders were just tossing this stuff, throwing this out. You're finding a second and third use for this material?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, over 80% of what we bring in is we can recover for viable markets and employ all these people. That's another great thing is we have a job for every dumpster, a full-time job, whereas at your traditional trash transfer station, one guy could process, you know, 50 dumpsters or something.
So besides drywall, I'm assuming pipes, I mean, all the things that one associates with a construction site.
Shrink wrap, cardboard, paper, concrete, brick, stone, plastic, ceiling tile, carpet, vinyl siding, asphalt shingles. I'm just getting started. Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking of even Slumdog Millionaire. I mean, there's some of those movies where you see people living off of trash heaps and finding things to sell.
Right, and those are the best recycling systems in the world over there. We do the best we can with the labor price point in the U.S., but that is inspirational. And they've come over and seen these high-tech American recycling systems with all this equipment and been like, you're so inefficient.
Yeah. And do you agree with them?
Definitely.
That humans are more efficient than the machines?
Right. Well, my guys, you know, we're trying to get pieces of brick this big, but there they'll get them, you know, right down to the pebble. Yeah.
So they've got something to teach you. Let me turn to you, Tim. And you've been on the show before talking about, I guess, the thinking behind Onion Flats and the kind of development building that you're doing in the city. Do you know, I mean, has he been to your site?
Oh, yeah. We use them, and we've used them for years. And when we discovered them, we said, so wait a second, you're going to drop a dumpster off, and we're going to pay the same thing for that dumpster, but we know that you're going to take it away, recycle 90% of it, which is what they do for us, and it's not going to cost us any more money. Why would anybody do anything else? And I think for us, that is the fundamental premise of our company. For us, sustainability is about common sense. You start from the perspective that it's common sense rather than what a lot of people think. It costs more money. There's a premium associated with thinking this way. Our work for many years has been attempting to demonstrate that buildings, which account for about 50% of the CO2 in our environment and therefore contributing significantly to global warming, and if we think we're going to get a handle on global warming in our lifetime, buildings have to be radically rethought. We've been designing and building buildings that are highly sustainable, significantly reduce CO2 levels, and the premise has always been, and it can't cost any more money. No. It shouldn't cost any more money. This should be common sense. And so the work that we do is they're demonstration projects, really, but they're demonstration projects for, we hope, politicians, developers, other architects look at the work and say, wow, if you can do that, why wouldn't we all be doing that?
And we're talking about something called net zero energy buildings?
Essentially buildings that maintain, manage their own energy resources on site. So that means the first thing you have to do is significantly reduce the amount of energy that a building needs.
Right.
When you do that, you have a very small percentage of energy that you need to generate, and you can do that in many means, solar thermal, solar PV, things like that.
I was reading that your buildings are sort of modules. That's part of the construction process?
Well, we've recently been building buildings in factories and then shipping modules of space to to the site, and that's that reduces time and therefore money and cost efficiency and so forth.
Let me turn back to you, Catherine, and going back even to the mayor's plan to make this the greenest city, was the idea also to get people like our three guests here involved and creating an environment or a city where they can do the things that they are doing?
Yeah, very much so. And actually, the mayor's commitment came really from the advocacy of professionals and advocates and community members who called on those mayoral candidates back in 2007 to take sustainability on as an issue and bring it into government. Mayor Nutter heard that loud and clear and took it very seriously. So when he came into office, he established the Office of Sustainability, and we really mapped out across government what we could do to support folks outside of government mm-hmm. doing great work, and also as government lead by example and start to do things differently ourselves.
Hila, I'm thinking about all the community gardens here. I mean, in certain ways, Philadelphia and the region is a great place to grow veggies and to have small and even large farms. In certain ways, it's a good city, a good region for what you're doing.
Absolutely. I mean, we have one of the you know, some of the best agricultural land surrounding Philadelphia. One of the upshots of low density population in the city and some of the blight is that it's been converted actually into green space under former administrations. And you know, Mayor Nutter, I think, has also been a real visionary. It was actually a meeting with the mayor and Catherine, where he invited Common Market to initiate one of the programs that we're doing with city employees. We run a workplace CSA, workplace wellness program for where we bring products into businesses. And when he heard about this, he said, "Hey, wait a second, can we do this with city employees?" I said, "Absolutely." It's called the Delaware Valley Farm Share. And he couldn't have been more excited and just more active in getting this going, really helping get to make the city employees more healthy by expanding their access to good foods as well.
It's interesting. I mean, and perhaps I'll put this to you, Tim, which is when you look across the city and you do see swaths of open land, and it's interesting to think about a city with lots of open land, some of it vacant, some of it blighted, but nonetheless, do you see that as opportunity?
Absolutely. And not just as open space, but we all know that sustainable living is urban living. You know, the amount of space that an individual needs to live on in an urban environment is significantly less than what we know traditionally in the United States on average. So there's opportunity for cities to become more vibrant places to be, and we noticed that over the past 10 years. People are moving back into urban environments. But in Philadelphia in particular, the opportunity for open space to then enhance that living is just pretty amazing.
Well, let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. It's part five of our five-part series looking at Philadelphia innovators. And in this hour, we're talking about sustainability and efforts to make Philadelphia the greenest city in America. And our guests are Catherine Gajewski, Hila Johnston, Tim McDonald, and John Wybar. And we want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
Support for WHYY is provided by Interact Theater Company and David Robson's Assassin. Inspired by a true football tragedy, Assassin opens 30 years after an on-field hit left a player paralyzed for life. Now his attacker is seeking a televised reconciliation. What begins as a careful game between the retired football star and his victim's lawyer quickly degrades into a volatile evening of stinging accusations and startling confessions. Assassin runs now through February 10th. Tickets online at interacttheater.org.
Do you have spring bulbs that didn't make it into the ground last fall? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next You Bet Your Garden, we'll reveal how you can still get those neglected tulips, daffodils, and croci to successfully burst into bloom. Plus answers to an especially large selection of your growing questions. That's You Bet Your Garden, Saturday morning at 11, right here on WHYY-FM.
Inauguration weekend is a time for pomp, circumstance, and history buffs to take a star turn. So quick, which president gave the longest inaugural address? Give up?
William Henry Harrison gave the longest inaugural address in history. It took him more than 2 hours to read.
More fun facts from the author of Don't Know Much About the American Presidents. That's next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. We're talking with people we have described as movers, shakers, and dreamers who are working to make the city a better place. It's the final installment of Philadelphia Innovators, and we're talking with four people who are working to make Philadelphia a greener, if not the greenest city in the country. Catherine Gajewski, Director of the Mayor's Office of Sustainability. Hailey Johnston is co-founder, co-director of Common Market Philadelphia. That's a distributor of locally grown food. Tim McDonald is an architect, president of Onion Flats, a collective that's building affordable, energy-efficient buildings. And John Wybar, co-founder and manager of Revolution Recovery, that operates two recycling facilities in the city. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. John, you said when your friend suggested, or I guess your partner suggested, going into this recycling business, you didn't jump on it right away. You had to think about it.
Well, I was working with an existing company and was seeing where that would go. But what was nice is I had absolutely no background in the trash and recycling business. A lot of the peers that I work with now, you know, their family's been in it for generations. So I got to take a completely fresh look at the industry. And had I have known anything, I'd probably been like, this is too crazy an idea
really?
To run with. Yeah.
But you think because you didn't know anything, you could think about things in more creative ways?
Well, unfortunately, through the 70s, 80s, 90s, all the brain power in the trash business was just focused on getting that waste from the origin point to the landfill as efficiently as possible. And they got really, really good at it. And that old mentality, you never bother sorting around through material, you know, just get it to the landfill. You don't double handle it. And that's allowed us to come in and say, we're going to try and separate this material and be naive enough to take a chance on that.
And you make money? It's profitable?
Just beginning to. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm assuming the price of plastic and drywall probably varies.
Oh, the business model 100% makes money. We can outcompete the conventional landfill just starting out penniless with big players in the industry. It takes a little while to get your legs under.
Oh, fair enough. Let me get some callers in. It looks like we have Joe from Northwest Philadelphia. Joe, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Thank you for having this subject.
You're welcome.
There is a bill right now in council that will restrict and prohibit urban farms in Philadelphia, and I'm wondering, isn't this bill counter to the initiatives that you're talking about today, and do you know why it's being proposed now?
Well, and it's a complicated issue, but I'm going to toss that to Catherine Gajewski. Go ahead, Catherine.
So the Zoning Code Commission led about a 4 or 5 year long public, very transparent process to look at what was a very antiquated Philadelphia zoning code and see how we could update it to make it more relevant with the issues we're dealing with today. And at the same time, weave sustainability in it throughout, you know, looking at open space, renewable energy, green buildings, a number of issues that we now all think are important to be addressing. So that zoning code went into effect just a number of months ago, and it's something that the mayor and his administration have been very proud of and very excited about. And there have been some conversations in City Council about different pieces of the zoning code, and there's been legislation introduced to make some changes already just a few months in. So it's an issue that's pending in City Council, and if it's an issue that you care about and others listening to the show care about, I encourage you to reach out to your City Council members and share your thoughts on the issue. We have heard a lot from the gardening community in particular about the challenges presented by the legislation that's pending right now. So, you know, it's in council's hands, and I really encourage you to reach out and share your thoughts.
Joe, thanks for the call to Radio Times. You can call as well. That phone number, 1-888-477-9499. Tim, I'm interested in how you became the architect, I guess, and designer that you did.
First of all, I'm I have three partners, and one of them is an architect, Howard Steinberg, and my other two brothers are not. But I don't know. I grew up in a family where we built things, and so I always loved thinking with my hands. When I discovered that architecture wasn't quite that. It was about designing paper buildings, but I never lost the fascination and interest in thinking with my hands. So it's not so much the architecture, it's the design build kind of nature of our work that is different, and that's, I think, different about us. We design it and then go out and build it. So because of that, we're just naturally in control more of the ideas and of the things we want to explore and then add to it. If you're the developer as well, right, then you really get to kind of dream, and you're in control of it. So that's what's so challenging and fun and exciting. We get to kind of write our own script and follow through with it. We have to be responsible and make it all work too. But that's the kind of person I like to be.
Well, Philadelphia is a city of row houses. I mean, different sure. styles of row houses. I don't know whether they still work in our desire for, you know, more energy efficiency, lower cost energy bills, things like that.
I think the row house, I could talk about this subject for an hour, but I'm a big fan of the row house. We have designed almost all of our work is row houses, yeah. and we've never designed the same row house twice. And they're so simple, these prototypes of building, these system ways of living, and yet there's so much variety, there's so much possibility. And then from a sustainable perspective, if you can just imagine, instead of four walls facing the environment, you've got two small walls facing. And then just conceptually, I like to think everybody's kind of supporting each other. You know, the neighbor, your neighbor
like
is snuggling
effect,
up.
Right?
Yeah, it's like, you know, your neighbor is helping heat your home and you're helping, you know, everybody's kind of a collective. It's right. a community. So I'm a big fan of the
And how about for you, Haile? Did you grow up in a food-focused family?
We definitely grew up as eaters.
Because you're still here?
Still here today. Absolutely. Our family grew up gardening in our backyard. My mother's a wonderful cook. We've always had a strong culture around food, absolutely.
Yeah. But and it's so interesting that it seems like, since we're talking about Philadelphia and the region, has sort of discovered food.
Hmm.
I don't know if it feels that way to you.
I feel like it's a rediscovery. It's going back to the way things were generations ago. And you know, even when folks talk about the work we do as innovative, and I say, actually, no, we're recreating the connections and relationships that used to exist between rural agricultural producers and urban communities. We're just going back to how things were, because actually things worked really well before. Somehow in our quest for eternal efficiency and systemic profits and things like that, we've gotten away from these regional relationships that used to really work well.
Do you have a lot of trucks?
Do we? Yeah, we have a few trucks.
Yeah. You have to get from point A to point B.
Absolutely,
right?
Absolutely. It's the less sexy part of the work we do, the trucks and the forklifts and so forth. But you know, we as an organization try to find the ways to be as efficient as possible, and so we have state of the art, all brand new, high efficiency diesel trucks. So.
Oh wow! Yeah. And how's the result? I mean, you know, Philadelphia is a city where lots of cool, exciting things are going on. Also, has a very high rate of poverty, certainly among, I think, the highest in of the top 10 cities in this country.
Yeah.
Seems like you're in the thick of that in a lot of ways.
Well, you know, so we live in Strawberry Mansion, one of the lowest income communities of the city. This vision for a reformed food system came from that community, trying to figure out how we address the health disparities of communities like ours while expanding access for good food to all people. And so, yes, very much in the thick of it. It's incredibly challenging work, but also incredibly gratifying, and we really feel like we're having an impact.
And when people say food deserts, you know what they're talking about.
Well, absolutely. It's you know, neighborhoods that effectively lack access to healthy foods. I mean, I think there is a distance measurement, you know, related to that. But I think any community where you struggle to get food could be considered that.
Do you think we should have a different kind of relationship with our trash? I mean, I think the idea is that, you know, you recycle as much as you can and throw at everything else, and then it just magically disappears.
Yeah, I think we're a little detached. If you go to these massive landfills and waste-to-energy plants, you're just staggered by you know, how a little tiny stream becomes a huge river. And definitely the public needs to know it's just once a week, that trash bag on your corner, and then times 10, times 1,000, times 10 million. Yes, we need to, you know, the key is reducing, you know, the overall volume, and then really looking at what we are wasting to recycle, and then on the, you know, the manufacturing end, to make products that are not impossible to recycle, like the chair I'm sitting on is made out of plastic and right. and metal and foam, and they'll say it's every component of it's recyclable, but it's just impossible to separate. It's a composite material, so it really takes all industries to make that happen.
And what's the closest landfill to where we're sitting here?
There's a landfill in up in Bucks County against the river, next to the old U.S. Steel site.
Like Fairless Hills area?
Yeah,
right. Lower Bucks.
Yeah. Right up. But we're priced out of that. That's for New Yorkers now, our Philly trash.
Apparently we import trash,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. We go farther west. There's, you know, many, many landfills mm-hmm. around Harrisburg and north. Throughout the state, like you said, we're a big importer. It's mm-hmm. a big business.
And for the things that you do recycle, how do you find customers for that?
We have, I mean, anything and everything you can imagine. We're shipping materials all over the world, and the vast majority stay local, and we have huge corporations taking them, and we have tiny little two-person shops taking them. You've really got to get creative to try to find homes for all these little materials. But it's amazing what's a waste stream on that construction site can be just a precious raw material for this other manufacturer out in, you know, in Lancaster or something.
So you're on the internet to find these people?
We have teams of people. We're, you know, they're coming to us through our postings, and we're out. Unfortunately, building our business, that was we spent so much time on R&D developing these markets. They've got me a little pinned down in the day to day. I'd love to get back out there and keep pushing it.
Well, and that, I think, is sometimes a struggle when you have this vision and an idea for a project, and there can be so much effort just keeping it going, managing it, and not really getting down and doing it. Do you find that as well, Haile?
Yeah. I mean, I'm just, while you were saying that, I was thinking of all the things that
happened.
Well,
you had that look on your face.
On my way to the studio this right. morning. And you know, we're a growing organization. We're trying to use the marketplace to affect the sustainability, you know, first and foremost, access to good food, but also the sustainability of agriculture in our region. One of the things that I was thinking about while you were talking about the landfill up the Delaware is how the seepage from that landfill possibly impacts our water quality and the health of the Delaware River. Something that we're incredibly focused on is using the market to increase the amount of sustainable and low chemical input agriculture happening in our region. When you look at the Chesapeake Water Bay, waterways and the bay down there, it is effectively a dead zone, largely because of Pennsylvania agriculture. Pennsylvania makes up the most of the Chesapeake watershed. If we can find ways to make agriculture more sustainable in Pennsylvania, we can return life to critical waterways.
And do you see a connection here, Tim?
Oh, many. I was just thinking, as Haile was talking, that everybody else at this table is doing really, really big things. The scale at which mm-hmm. they're working is so huge. The idea of managing that seems so unbelievable to me.
Like 400 tons of construction and manufacturing waste.
Yes, and the connection to so many different industries and people and so forth. I find it difficult enough to build a building. So we're little guys, and yet I guess the way we work is that we think that if you just work really carefully and diligently and stay committed to an idea on one building, that can be inspiration for a much larger scale. That can have another developer say, well, we can do this too. So I think we're little guys with big ambitions. These guys are big guys, and the city the city as well, with big ambitions. So
let me get someone. Did you want to say something?
I was just going to say I think we're still little guys too.
You fooled him. But yeah. Let me see what Bob has to say. Bob, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, good morning, guys. I love the topic. Really
Thanks.
Great subject.
Thank you.
Pleased to say that my wife and I just completed a passive house just outside of Philadelphia in Montgomery County. And, you know, one of our goals is with a passive house to reduce the energy footprint so much as to potentially give us the ability to be a net negative home, and that is to basically be able to produce more energy than we consume and enhance the capacity of the overall grid.
And Bob, that's the goal, and that's your goal as well, Tim.
Absolutely. We just I don't know Bob, but I want to get to know you because we just completed the first passive house certified project in Pennsylvania in the Logan section of Philadelphia, and I know what it takes, and I know the kind of commitment that Bob is talking about. And at the same time, after doing it, I see, and this is what happens all the time. When you're in the middle of doing it, you think this is so difficult, it's so impossible. When you complete it, you say, "Wow,
that wasn't
it wasn't so bad." So that's where we are right now. We're just so excited about being able to come up with this very risky idea, take that risk, go and actually say that we could to a client, "Yes, we can do this for you," deliver it. And then say, "My God, let's now take this to a larger scale. Let's actually." So I'm really happy to hear about Bob. I'd love to know how you did it.
But. Yeah, Bob, thanks for the call. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and Bob, you know, Bob and Tim are the gazelles in the residential field. But you know, especially on days like today where it's 32 degrees outside, a lot of folks in this region who live in older homes are wondering what the starting point is to a greener home. And I will say, you know, a great way to start if passive house is kind of a little bit further down the line for where you are, if your house is leaking and cold and your energy bills are higher than you'd like them to be, a great place to start is with an energy efficiency home audit and then retrofit. And we have a great program that we offer in the 5-county region called Energy Works. So you can start the process by signing up for an audit, learn a little bit more about your house and where the opportunities are to save energy and save money. So if anyone's interested in taking those first baby steps, go online and check out www.energyworksnow.com. And we're really lucky to have the resources from the federal government to have this program available in our region.
And we're almost up in a break. And I should say to our listeners that we were actually just basically talking about leaky, drafty houses before we went on the air. That's a big problem, Tim.
Oh, my God. That's maybe the biggest problem in urban environments. And in fact, the interesting thing about passive house, which maybe we'll talk about a little bit later, is it has one of the largest followings in New York City right now.
Huh.
There are certified passive houses coming out of New York City. It's kind of a hub, and most of them are renovations because there's not a lot of new construction going on in New York City. So people are demonstrating that not only the need but the viability of building super insulated, airtight, high-performance buildings.
That's Tim McDonald. He's an architect and president of Onion Flats, an award-winning development, design, and building collective here in Philadelphia. Also with us, John Wybar, co-founder, manager of Revolution Recovery, operates two recycling facilities in the area. Hailey Johnston, co-founder, co-director of Common Market Philadelphia, that's a distributor of locally grown foods to the Philadelphia region. And Catherine Gajewski, director of the Mayor's Office of Sustainability. Give us a call, 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. We'll be right back.
Abington Health supports WHYY and offers minimally invasive procedures designed to help people overcome strokes and brain aneurysms. Physicians use interventional techniques through small incisions to help speed recovery. Patient stories at abingtonpowertoheal.org.
On the next Fresh Air, Cullen Murphy on the history of the Inquisition. Some of the interrogation techniques used today were described in 13th century manuals.
What today we would call the good cop, bad cop, that's laid out by the medieval inquisitors in exactly the same way.
Murphy's book, God's Jury, is coming out in paperback. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY. I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Troops will weigh in on the use of drones in the war in Afghanistan. Also, the woman who has seen them all will speak to a curator at the Smithsonian about inaugural gowns, past and present. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture, here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY, Big Blue Marble Bookstore, an independent, locally owned bookstore in the heart of Mount Airy Village, carrying smart, fun books for all ages. For details on author events, book clubs, story times, and more, BigBlueMarbleBooks.com.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. The final installment of our five-part series, Philadelphia Innovators. We're talking about efforts to make Philadelphia the greenest, most sustainable city in the country, something that Mayor Michael Nutter put on his to-do list a couple of years ago. And we have four guests who have joined us, and we're also taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me just share a question, Hailey, that you put to John during the break, with the idea that some of this material that you recycle ending up back in construction sites.
Yes, absolutely. We're many of our partners, Armstrong World Industries has a plant in Marietta, Pennsylvania. We'll ship ceiling tile back to them. They drop it right into their big mixer. It looks similar to pancake batter, and they'll run that down their line and cut new ceiling tile right from it. And many materials, you know, are downcycled, like a 2x4 will become mulch, but not so much downcycling, beneficial use, we call that. But yes, plastic, steel, cardboard, paper are all going right back into to new products.
And you've got a place for everything. I mean, everything gets recycled.
Well, we recover 80% of the inbound material for recycling, and then the other 20 is currently landfill or waste to energy. But we're putting in equipment to handle that, to make higher-end fuel products with it and screen out materials. So, no, there's not you can't get out. There's composite materials we can't handle. There's materials there's just no market for, and there's materials that are just too cost-prohibitive to recycle.
So everything you know about this, you learned on the job?
Yeah. We were in the early days, we were sorting the dumpsters ourselves. And going and collecting the material at the construction sites, and that was it. Well, we figured out wood. Now, what are we going to do with? We've got all these spackle buckets. What are we going to do with these? What are we going to do with the shrink wrap? What are we going to do with the asphalt shingles? And we need to keep going that trend and keep up with the newer materials that are being introduced to the marketplace.
And for you, Hailey, what was the biggest, I guess, learning curve for you? Then we'll get back to our callers.
Yeah, when we started, we knew nothing about the food system. All of the trucks and activity that connects growers to the marketplace. We knew nothing about logistics, cold storage. I mean, similarly, we have learned everything we know about the business along the way, starting from a feasibility study and business plan that was funded by the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Wow, and I guess it helps when the First Lady of the United States is all about veggies and gardens and eating healthy.
Yeah, I think it's building momentum. I think it's raising awareness so that the sustainable choice or the healthy choice becomes the easy choice for more people.
And I know you work with schools, right? The idea is to get food into schools where kids can eat it.
Absolutely. Part of our strategy has been to scale, to work with larger aggregators of food, like schools, like hospitals, like universities, places where we can partner with organizations that have a real commitment to sustainability and higher quality food for their constituents.
Mm-hmm. Let me get some more callers in. It looks like we have Mike from Bucks County joining us on Radio Times. And Mike, go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
First of all, I'd just like to show my appreciation for what the city is doing and what these guys are doing.
Great.
And I have a question. I've got a couple of properties in Philadelphia, and I'm interested in putting green roofs on them, but I'm concerned about the initial cost, the ongoing cost, and the weight on the property itself, on the roof. And if I assume it would be Tim who would answer these questions, then I'll just take my answers off the air.
Yeah, Mike, thanks. Actually, I'm going to toss it first to Catherine, but Tim, I'd love to have you weigh in as well. What do you think, Catherine?
Mike, are you looking – well, I don't know if you're looking to do the work yourself. We have a number – actually, there's – Philadelphia, I think, has the second highest number of green roofs in the United States, right behind Chicago and New York. So our region and our city has a wealth of experts in the green roof field who I'm sure would love to hear from you and come out and take a look at the buildings that you have. And I'll look over to Tim, who I know works closely with a lot of the firms around and might have some more specific recommendations for how you start out, because you absolutely want to install a green roof properly. You don't want that thing leaking, but they can have a number of benefits when done well.
And what are those benefits? Then we'll hear from Tim.
Yeah, depending on the building, they can manage the stormwater, which is an issue that's really important here in Philadelphia. They can help with cooling in the area. Urban heat island effect is something, so they can help with cooling both in the building as well as in the adjacent area. So depending on the site and depending on the building, they can do a number of things for you, and they're just cool.
And they're just cool on top of that. Go ahead, Tim.
Well, I just want to add a couple things to what they can do. They can also turn roofs into gardens. This gets back to Haley and you know, the real estate that we have in the city, and that real estate isn't taken over when you build a building because you can have a garden on the roof. But, we actually have a green roof company. We've built hundreds of thousands of green roofs, square feet of green roofs over the East Coast. We finished the Barnes Museum recently. And the caller's questions are good ones. I can say this. You have to the structure of your roof has to be able to hold that extra weight. You have to build the cost of that green roof into your construction costs. However, there are tax credits that can be had in Philadelphia that will return, I believe it's 25% of the cost of that green roof. Wow. So you really just need to sit down with a company to come up with a specific approach to it. The other thing that you get from that is that the water department is now charging you more money for water and sewer use if you are not managing your own stormwater on your site. If you are, the cost of your water and sewer bill goes down. So there are many, many benefits. And we like to say that we have demonstrated that green roofs can and should be put on every single building in the city.
Yeah. Intriguing thought of growing all your tomatoes on your roof, right?
A very cool idea. I don't know about
I don't know
all
how doable that is or not. Hey, Mike, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let's see what Greg from Lehigh Valley has to say. And, Greg, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you.
You're welcome.
I've got I teach environmental science, a specific question. I wanted to know if you could speak with any specificity about the net carbon footprint of recycling, specifically with a mind to the transportation costs. You know, the carbon produced by transportation. And related to that, your new fleet of trucks, I'm curious. I understand that trucks over a certain weight, commercial trucks, aren't required to have an emissions inspection. And I'm curious what you think about that.
Well, great. Fair enough. It's a good question. I'm tossing it first to you, John Weibar.
I do not have my transportation expert with you. I have to get maybe Hailey knows on the trucking question. But, I mean, the recycling materials is such the main environmental benefit is preserving our raw materials. So every ton of steel or plastic that we can keep in the loop, the amount of energy required to recycle that is just a tiny, tiny fraction of what's required to go after raw materials and mine and harvest. And so even if you're trucking it 2, 3, 4 times farther, the bottom line is phenomenal for the environment. You want to recycle almost anywhere possible, and I mean we've looked at numbers in many things in carpet. It's almost staggering.
Really?
See when now knowing what I know and how many jobs these create, when I see recyclable materials going to the landfill or going to a traditional trash transfer station, it's brutal. Yeah,
it hurts.
Those are our jobs. Those are our precious natural resources, our raw materials.
Kevin, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, and you know, as a city, we pick up garbage and recycling across the city, and we think about it really as an integrated system. So when we're thinking about how much it costs to offer that service to residents, we're thinking about the transportation piece, which includes both labor and fuel and the trucks, as well as the landfill costs and all of that. You know, an example in Philadelphia that you can see out and about how we started to kind of crunch the numbers and do things a little differently are the Big Belly trash bins that we have. They're solar compacting trash bins. And we had the old waste baskets with the bags in them, and, you know, gust of wind would come and blow the trash all over. But we also had to have trucks go across the city all day long emptying out those baskets. So we were able to send fewer routes across the city, fewer emissions, and being able to redistribute the labor into other projects by not having to constantly go and remove trash from the old waste bin. So just an example of how you're kind of thinking about those two things together.
Yeah, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let's see what Don from Princeton has to say. And Don, go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Good, how are you?
All right. Hey, first I just want to say that the guys at Revolution Recovery do a great job. They actually did a job here in Princeton. I think they were had another name at the time. They did a job for the Whole Earth Center here, and it was great to see them recycling everything into the dumpster there.
Good.
It was pretty cool.
Good.
Yeah, and their prices are pretty comparable to the guys who don't recycle. I'm going to be using them to do a job, to do a kitchen remodeling.
You're getting two
job.
Thumbs up there, Don, from
Oh, yeah, definitely
from John.
Two thumbs up for these guys.
Okay, well,
so
you're getting two thumbs up, too. Go ahead, though.
So my question was, did they ever think of taking it to the next, in my mind, the next logical step in doing landfill mining, you know, getting the stuff out of the landfills that has been in there for years before we recycled, because, you know, stuff really doesn't decompose in the landfills, so it seemed like that'd be a great resource.
What do you think, John?
Don, thanks so much for the call. Remember that project well. That was a great one. Always a pleasure to work with a team and an owner like that. Yes, landfill mining, unfortunately, we have got our hands full. We're fighting every day to keep the construction materials out, so it's not on our immediate horizon, but it is happening. You're absolutely right. There are plastics, metals that generations before have thrown around, and it is already underway in some countries. And will be a big business. You know, as resources deplete, as technology gets better, those landfills people are going to be looking at those and seeing, there's good stuff in there. How do we get it out? So unfortunately, we're not on our radar yet, but yes, it is happening.
Don, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Tim, let me go back to you. I was reading about the Ridge Flats, which is the idea of creating this, I guess, I'm not sure what the word is exactly, but about 150 houses or something in the East Falls section?
Yeah, it's a 123-unit apartment complex with some retail and parking. And the intention of it is to demonstrate, we've done these passive house, kind of net zero energy row homes, but the intention is to kind of take it to the next level and, again, demonstrate what's possible on a larger scale, an urban scale. So this project is meant to be the largest passive house certified project in the country and the largest net zero energy project in the country. And we're in the process of getting financing for that right now.
And is it solar? Is it where do you get the energy to be passive?
Yes.
Where do you get your energy?
Okay. So as I said earlier, the key to building a net, and I should say that there is no such thing as a net zero energy building. It's a net zero energy possible building, because if you took a 20-minute shower and I took a 2-minute shower, we'd have two very different buildings.
Right.
So so much of it is about education. That's first.
How you use the building that you're living in.
Yeah, the people that are actually in living there. So, but the first thing you do, as I said earlier, is you design the building, and what it really is I like to say, the best heating system in the world is not the sun or some heat pump. It's actually a coat. You know, that's the best heating system in the world. You just keep in what's already there. So the most important first thing to do is to design a very well-insulated and airtight building. When you do that, you reduce the energy that's needed for these buildings to cool and heat themselves by up to 90%. And that sounds crazy.
It sounds
impossible, but we're doing it. And when that happens, then solar PV, which is not very efficient as an energy source, becomes able to cover that 10% of energy that you need. And so that's the balance. The balance is about how much money do you put into the envelope and how much do you put into the solar. One thing's for sure, if you don't take on the thermal envelope of a building and radically change the way we do that, the amount of you would never be able to put enough solar on your buildings to generate what you need. So you have to start with that in the beginning.
Fascinating. I'm looking at the clock here, just a couple more minutes before I have to say goodbye. So, Haile, looking ahead, what are your plans for Common Market Philadelphia?
Yeah, so Common Market continues to grow. I mean, we've enjoyed 80% compound growth in the 4 short years we've been in business. This last year, we did about $1.5 million in sales, and we just acquired a new building, actually, up in Deaneary, right down the street from St. Christopher's Hospital for Children, where we look to partner with folks there in the Pennsylvania First Congressional District to really have impact on the health and well-being of the community there, which has been determined to be one of the most food insecure districts in the country. We're launching the Delaware Valley Grown brand, which is going to brand our products in the marketplace so that people have a way to connect not just with the fact that something was produced locally, but the production values, whether or not these products actually had fair labor standards, fair payment to farmers, low chemical inputs, really trying to connect the consumer to how food is produced in our region and branding it as such, again, as the Delaware Valley Grown, so that people can identify sustainable products in the marketplace.
And how about for you, John, as you look ahead for your company?
Yes, we both, you know, our mission is to keep these materials out of landfills, and we're looking to move into new markets that are underserved, as well as continue to find homes for the materials that we currently can't work with. And let me just add that I wish the best for Haile here. America needs him right now, and I want to see him nationwide.
I think we need all you foursome who are here. Catherine, we're almost out of time here, but will Philadelphia be the, not just the greatest, but the greenest city in the country?
Yeah, I think we're well on our way, if already not a leader in urban sustainability. We have great bones. Philadelphia was built smart, and we're just getting smarter and smarter about how we grow forward.
Well, my thanks to all four of you for joining us today on Radio Times. Catherine Gajewski, Haile Johnson, Tim McDonald, and John Wybar. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can learn about this 5-part series and much more about the program as well. Bob Balls, the engineer, all this week for Radio Times. Our thanks to you, Bob. Also, Joyce Lieberman is the Radio Times supervising engineer who successfully launched our new phone system. Thank you, Joyce. The program is produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder. I'm Marty Moscoe. Thank you so much for joining us.